Hello and welcome to episode 15 of The Divide. Today we'll be talking about virtual reality, the state of the current hardware and games, and what's coming on the horizon. My name is John Wordsworth and I'm here with Chris Ford and Ben Dodson. Let's start with you, Chris. How are things in sunny England?
Well, it's not sunny. We have had just a blanket cloud for as long as I can remember. But otherwise, everything's peachy. Thank you.
Peachy. You've been on vacation since the last year, right?
I have. I've been on holiday, we prefer to call it.
Semester.
Yes, I have.
You missed all of the sunshine.
Yeah. And to be fair, when I went on holiday, the first week was also blanket cloud. And it was like 20 degrees, which was really disappointing for the south of France. But it's fine because I was drinking so much wine that I didn't really notice.
So it's like being at home then.
Yeah, absolutely. Except I couldn't understand what anyone was saying.
And the wine was better, I presume.
The wine was better and half the price and twice as nice. Yeah, basically.
Cool. And how are things with you, Ben?
Yeah, good. I'm glad that it has been very sunny here. It was 34 degrees one day.
Good lord.
Week or the week before, and that did not sit well with me at all.
No. How did you know that it was 34 degrees? Because presumably you were in your dark room with the aircon on.
Yeah, well, the aircon told me how hot it was before I turned it on.
And remember, once a day, he has to sit and look out the window, hoping to watch people get wet in the rain.
Yeah.
So he got disappointed with that.
I'm very happy now that it is cloudy. It rained yesterday, and I was walking around in a t-shirt just going, oh, this is nice. So, no, I'm good.
Cool. It's been probably time that you hear a bit of a Swedish weather update, the most important part of the show. So it's been, it's been pretty hot here as well. The same sort of story. Not quite as hot as in the UK. It's been high 20s. I've possibly hit 30 once or twice. But I think much like when I was in the UK, the place isn't really built for it. So it's nice-ish when you're outside and then you get home and you realise it's still 30 degrees in your house. And you're like,
So it's an annoying thing about Americans when you go, oh god, it's so hot, it's like 30 degrees, like that's nothing, it's even hotter over here. And it's like, yeah, but you've got air conditioning in every building.
Yeah. Like,
and then you go from a building into a car, you don't go outside, you lazy bastards. So
also they don't understand the difference between centigrade and Fahrenheit. So you say it's 30 and they say, it's like 90 here.
Yeah.
But we love you, Americans, keep listening to our show, you know.
Yeah.
I did not approve that. Veto.
Unless you vote Trump, then it's all over.
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah.
There we go. We just lost our entire redneck portion of the audience.
Go Hill Dog.
But no, the weather's been good. Things have been ticking along, and everyone just goes on vacation in July in Sweden. It's been super quiet in the office out of maybe 150 people. There's been 15 or 20 in the office for this month.
You and your wife, the only people left in Stockholm.
Pretty much. Well, apart from all the tourists that obviously come here, but even the commuter train is really quiet in the morning.
Like 28 days later, just without the zombies.
The tourists just come out in the afternoon. So by the time you come home, it's busy. But in the morning, it's just dead and quiet. So it's pretty cool. Not many meetings at work, lots of time to code. Nice. So we've got quite a lot of follow-up to rattle through, and most of it's yours, Ben. So
yay.
Let's kick off with Ukulele.
I'll be quick. Yeah, Ukulele, we talked about it, I think, when we talked about Kickstarters, and again when we were talking about games we were looking forward to this year. It got pushed back to next year now, but Ukulele is the 3D platformer puzzly thing, very much in the same vein as Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong Country, all that kind of stuff, by the same people. And their toy box came out this week, which was like a Kickstarter reward where it's like an alpha version, but it isn't the game itself. It's like a separate little toy box they've made so that you can just see how the interaction works and stuff like that. And it was pretty good. I mean, it's an hour-long experience, which is cool. I mean, it's quite a lot of stuff in there. I wasn't blown away by it, but then it's got shitty textures because it's just showing off the characters more than anything else. But it's interesting, and if you like go on YouTube or something, you'll find loads of videos of people who've played through it and demoed it all. So it was pretty interesting, but Nothing earth-shattering, it's just sort of more of the same. I found the controls to be quite fiddly, actually, and irritating, and it reminded me of... Actually, those games were wonderful at the time, but the camera angles were shit then as well, and it's kind of sad that...
They haven't fixed it.
10, 15, 20 years later, we still can't angle the camera properly when swimming, but... nothing's changed since the Nintendo 64.
Is it coming out on console as well as PC? Or?
Yes. So this toy box is only on PC.
Yeah.
But it's coming to... Let me get this right. PC, Mac and Linux. PS4 and Xbox One.
Cool. Linux?
Yep.
Does anything specifically come to Linux?
Yes, most Steam games do. Because if build Steam. It with Unity, then it automatically works on... That for okay. both people that run Steam on Linux.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
Catch up with the times, Chris. Come on.
Oh yeah, I'm really sorry. People, when people start talking about Linux around me, I usually just shut down, stop listening.
Since you've been back from France, Ubuntu has become the most used operating system in the world. Everyone uses it now. No one uses OS X or Windows 10. We've just moved to Ubuntu.
Yeah,
God,
so, fun times.
If you can't use the it's terminal, end you can't times. Use the PC. Sorry.
End times.
So, sticking on the gaming theme, should we move on to Doom?
Yeah, I've been playing Doom.
Can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
Well, I tell you how it came about. I bought a gaming PC, and I chose a Asus Republic of Gamers motherboard, and it came with a free copy of Doom, and I was like, no chance I'm playing that. I'll give that to John, because I would have given it to you, Chris, but you don't have a PC, so it wouldn't have worked.
I do not.
So I was like, I'll give it to John, and he was like, quite, oh yeah, awesome, thank you, because he was going to buy it, and played through it and said it was good. And then when I bought my Asus monitor, I got another free copy of Doom. I was like, well, I've got no one to give this copy of Doom to, so I'll just install it, because I might as well. And then they did the update where they let you use the new Vulkan APIs that John mentioned a few episodes back. And I was like, well, I'll have a look just to see how it looks and try out the new graphics card. And it does look nice. I mean, I get a full 100 frames a second plus at ultra-wide 3440 by 1440 resolution at ultra settings. So it looks really good and very smooth. And I played through the first bit. And I was like, well, this hasn't shit me up too much. And it's quite fun. And then one night, I think I was drunk, probably, I picked it up again. And I was like, yeah, play through a little bit of this and enjoyed it a huge amount. Hmm. And then I got all nostalgic for the original Doom because it's much more like original Doom than
it's
it is
like...
It's
a lot like it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really like the original Doom. And like it's really evocative of it in really quite subtle ways. It just feels like you're playing
little
it.
Things like the way that doors, when they open, they make the same noise that they did like in original Doom, that sort of noise, which I just rendered terribly. But
I've only played
sound effect, which I love.
I've only played the demo, which I only discovered it a couple of days ago that there was a demo on PS4, so I downloaded it, and I just enjoyed it so much. I will definitely be picking that game up and playing it through because, although from what I understand, I'll be leaving the multiplayer alone.
Oh, well, played the multiplayer last night.
We did, yeah. We gave it a quick run.
I say last night, but this morning it was 2:30 this morning.
a quick hour before sleep, but it was actually not that bad. It was
that's pretty good.
It was fairly hollow. I mean, it's not going to compete with Battlefield and Call of Duty and Titanfall, but it's a classic arena run-and-gun shooter. Your health doesn't regenerate. It's not about hiding up, you know, crawling up the hill on your belly and trying to get a good sniper shot. It's just run around, jump around, and shoot bullets. So in that sense, it's quite fun. I don't think it's going to steal many hours of our time, but, you know, I could see myself playing it again. One or two more times.
I know Smosh Games described it as the Doom multiplayer as blending old and new concepts together like Skittles and fish.
Yeah, I played the beta and I really didn't like that. I don't know if they've changed much or if it's just because I've played the single player now and I'm not as shit. But it's alright. But the single player is where it's at. I mean, I certainly wouldn't recommend buying this game for the multiplayer. But the single player, it's really good, and maybe it's not worth the full asking price if you're just going to get 12 hours of single player out of it. But when it's half price, there's no reason not to drop £25 in it.
No.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Classic action.
I like the fact that there's a nice part in every level. There's a secret, a very, very well hidden secret, where a door will open somewhere and then you actually go back into classic Doom. So it's got like, nice. All the classic Doom textures, apart from the monsters and your gun slash hand. And that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Just run around in like a classic with all the old fashioned barrels.
Yeah, just a nice little touch, a nod. But
yeah, so it's pretty good. So I'm enjoying that much more than I thought I would, and it hasn't shit me up too much.
Definitely more action than horror. Like in Doom 3, it went a little bit horror-y, trying to get all the jump scares.
Yeah, Doom 3 was not for me.
I think if there are jump scares in this, they're not many of them. There's like one or two maybe intentional ones, but most of them are just, oh shit, there's guys behind me. So it makes you jump, but not because it's a horror scenario.
I've also been playing it in two different ways. I play it on my PC where I've got the ultra wide screen using the keyboard and mouse like right up against the monitor, and then I also sometimes play it downstairs in my living room. I stream it to the Nvidia Shield and then I'm playing it on a 4K screen with a coffee table in between, which is what Chris recommended.
Yeah.
So things don't shit me up so much.
Yeah,
and that's pretty good.
Yeah. Cool, that's Doom then. That's yeah, worth buying at half price, I think. So, right, let's keep on the gaming theme for one more bit of follow-up. And I think it was the last show again when we mentioned the Xbox One S, which is the slimline Xbox One coming out very soon.
Not to be confused with the Xbox codenamed Scorpio, which is the allegedly 4K one coming out next year. This is the interim Xbox 1.5.
And it's essentially the Xbox... like slim, I think that's probably the main. I mean, just to make it more confusing, it does support 4K output, but not 4K gaming.
No, and to confuse that even more, it does have an improved processor, but that's so that you can get high dynamic range in some supported games on a 4K screen. So if you have a HDR 4K TV and you play Forza Horizons 3, then you get HDR, which so you get nicer color balance. But only in that game and only if you've got the compatible TV and all the rest of it, blah, blah, blah. But that improved GPU doesn't help at all in any other games. They'll be exactly the same. There is some upscaling. So allegedly playing, if you've got 4K TV and you play a game on the Xbox One and a game on the Xbox One S, it should look better on the Xbox One S because that's upscaling it rather than your TV doing the upscaling. So it should be better unless you've got a crazy expensive TV with a really good upscaler. But apart from that, I mean, the only real benefit is that it adds 4K support for apps, so things like Netflix, which, I mean, if you've got a 4K TV, it probably already has Netflix in it. Mine does. And then it adds a 4K Blu-ray player. Now, the interesting thing about that is that the Xbox One S should start around £250, maybe £260, £270 for the 500 gig model. Most 4K Blu-ray players start at £350, £400 just for the Blu-ray player. So it's an amazingly good deal if you want a 4K Blu-ray player and you can play games on it as well.
Yeah, I guess
so. I've sold my Xbox One and I've ordered my Xbox One S.
And I guess you've done primarily for the 4K Blu-ray experience, right? Because you've got a 4K TV.
Yeah, so I will. Well, it's stupid because I'm probably unlikely to buy any 4K Blu-rays really because they're like £25 each and I can just, you know, torrent them. So unlikely to do much of that, although I might do a bit. But I kind of want the HDR stuff for some of the games that I play. Hopefully Titanfall 2 will support it because that's the only game that I play on the Xbox One anymore. But I guess we'll see.
I guess a big part of, like, when you've got a 4K TV, you want to be able to play 4K Blu-rays. I don't know, it seems like the right thing to have underneath it, the option to play it, even if you only ever end up playing like two of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you'll probably find some in a bargain bucket, like not super cheap or anything, but they'll be £7 for some random film that you used to like. And like, yeah, I might as well buy that 4K just to see it in 4K. Might be a year or two.
One of the nice things is that it comes with their new controller, which... has got like a textured grip, which is nice, but then it also works with Microsoft's proprietary Xbox wireless technology, but also with Bluetooth. So you can just use it as a Bluetooth controller with anything that supports Bluetooth controllers, which is kind of nice because it just makes it a bit easier to use that controller in other places.
Yeah, I think I'll probably be getting yet another Xbox One controller for that reason, because it's nice to have... I've got my Elite plugged into my PC, but when you've got something which has a wireless controller, other Bluetooth controllers, apart from the Xbox and the PS4 ones, are fairly shoddy, aren't they? So,
yeah, they are, for sure.
So it's nice to be able to use it on maybe an Android Shield or something as a streaming, if you've got like a little streaming box by your TV. But yeah, I guess, really quickly, other things that aren't enough for me to upgrade, but I think it's kind of cool. The whole thing's going to be white and sleeker, and there's no more power supply, like no more brick sitting next to your Xbox, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, the box is 40% smaller, which is like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then it's more impressive because the old one was the massive box and then a massive power supply. So it's even smaller than that. Not that that really matters, because I mean, it's brick, you just stick it behind the back of the TV anyway, who cares? But
it is nice. I mean, especially if you wanted to, I don't know, take it with you somewhere and play games with someone else, you know. Not that I do that much anymore, but I'm sure some people do. So
the upshot is, if you're in the market for an Xbox One, then it's a good update. If you're in the market for a 4K Blu-ray player, it seems good. If you've already got an Xbox One, then there's probably not much point. And if you're waiting for 4K gaming, buy a PC.
Yeah, that's a good summary. Thank you, Ben. So, move away from gaming for a little bit before we swing right back with the VR sledgehammer. In the last show, we talked about WWDC primarily. And I believe, Ben, you have been using some of the betas on your, I was going to say phone, but various devices, yeah. I guess, phone and watch. And maybe it'd be worth having a quick update, primarily to see if you've had any issues and whether it's safe for other people to upgrade.
Yeah, I'm running iOS 10, we're on beta 3 now. On my iPad Pro and my iPhone 6S, and not really had any problems. The only problem, and I know Chris is going to jump on this, is that my Bluetooth doesn't work terribly well now. But then that's because, to be fair, most iOS betas seem to break the Bluetooth for LE stuff. So, like, Bluetooth headphones work fine. There's no problem with that. And, like, Bluetooth for AirDrop, that's all working fine. But, like, connecting to my Hydrate Spark water bottle, which finally came, doesn't work anymore in iOS 10 because it's buggered that up. And, like, my flick buttons don't work now because iOS 10 has sort of broken it all. So that's the only issue that I've had. In terms of the iOS itself, it's, you know, working fine. I've not noticed any massive battery drain. I encountered a bug in Photos in the first beta, which drained my battery, but that was a one-off thing. So now it's all fine. But the main reason I updated my phone wasn't for iOS 10, because I'm not really that fussed by the changes within iOS 10 itself. It was more for WatchOS 3, because you have to update the iPhone to get the update for that. And that's great. It's a huge change for the Apple Watch. Like, it's so much faster. And little things, like yesterday I discovered something that was probably in the keynote, but I just missed it, which was John sent me a message yesterday, and then I saw it had a scribble thing, so I was just going to write boo on like a little scribble, and I thought it was going to send like the drawing, but it didn't. It like turned it into the characters, so actually, like, I could draw the letters and then it converted them into text, which was pretty cool for like message.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in the keynote, and it's really nice, because whenever I want to reply to a message on my watch at the moment, if I do, it's either a canned response or I try and talk, but that doesn't always work out great.
No, there's some situations where you don't want to talk.
So it's really nice to be able to write five characters, because that's, you know, 5 or 10 characters is usually enough to get your response across for like later, or yes, no, etc. So.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, for both, it seems like a solid update. I mean, my recommendation is always to people, don't update your primary phone, because you will screw it over. With the public betas, like, I can see why they did the public beta thing, because people were buying developer accounts just to get the stuff and then complaining. So I can see why they've done that, but I kind of wish they hadn't, because people upgrade and then they complain when stuff doesn't work. And it's like, well, this isn't a Google beta. This is a proper beta whereby it's full of bugs and it will not work well for everyone. So you really shouldn't do it on your primary phone. I mean, I do it on mine because I don't actually use my iPhone that much. I mean, I work from home, so I don't go out so much. It's always plugged in, so if there is battery drain issues, it doesn't affect me as much as it affects other people. And I don't really use many apps that aren't the standard ones. So it's never really a problem for me as it can be for other people. Biggest annoyance, the thing that gets me most is that, and it's such a basic thing that Apple could patch, is I don't understand why they let people leave reviews on the App Store with beta versions of iOS. Like, someone using iOS 10 should not be able to leave a one-star review on an app saying, oh, it crashes on launch. Because it's like, well, yeah, it probably will because the APIs have changed and stuff isn't working.
Yeah.
So that irritates me. You get a whole load of one-star reviews this time of year from people with beta updates.
That's pretty poor for app developers as well. Sucks for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty shit. But that's, you know. That's the App Store.
Yeah. Cool. So
it's a good update, but I mean, I just wait until September, unless you're really desperate to see the new notification center.
I've been resisting pretty hard, and we do the same dance every year. I'll just wait to release, and then at some point around either between beta 1 and beta 4, I upgrade, and I have resisted so far. But I think I want my new watchOS now, so I might do it this weekend.
Yeah, the watchOS is good.
Got to wait long enough for at least the first version to go through, because that's usually the one that's... Okay, sometimes they drop a doozy halfway through, but normally the first one or two are the ones that murder your battery and then they get over that. But I ran it on my iPad since beta 1, and the battery, if anything, it's... Well, I mean, it feels the same. Maybe it's better, but it feels the same. You know.
If you install watchOS 3, one bug that I do have is in beta 3, time travel just doesn't work. So if you use the little side scroller, just nothing happens. It's like, okay, fine. So there are bugs.
Yeah.
I mean, that might well be in the known issues thing that they give out, but yeah. It's a good update. So.
Cool. Awesome.
It'll be good in September.
Nice. So Chris, I've seen a couple of comic-related items on the show notes, and I'm assuming they're from you.
Well, yes, it's a good assumption to make. I just thought I'd run through just a couple of updated things. I mean, it's obviously been quite a while since we have last spoken, so there's been quite a few changes. Obviously, DC's Rebirth thing is in full swing. That's been going for about 2 months now. Did you read it in the end, John?
I haven't yet, but I'm going on a trip next week.
So I'm May. Actually, it came out.
Yeah, I put it on my iPad to read on a flight next week. So
I will once again skip over the big things that I wanted to talk about. But there's a couple of not necessarily strictly comic book based things that I was going to mention for DC. Certainly, first of all, is that Geoff Johns, he has been like the chief creative talent behind DC's comics branch, and he's been responsible for a lot of the things that have helped to push DC comics sort of forward over the last 10 years or so, and certainly the whole Rebirth initiative I believe is his baby, but he's just been announced officially as being, I think, the head of DC's entertainment division now.
Oh, cool.
He obviously, I mean, I think this probably came in the wake of Batman versus Superman, which didn't get splendid reviews. But he has been responsible for things like the Flash TV show, which is, you know, I think it's excellent, and it's certainly got a big fan following. So yes, he's basically he is now the man in charge of DC movies. I don't know what this is going to mean for the comic book arm, because I think he's been a fairly driving force in all of the good things, but I think it can only be good news for the DC films, probably, because I think, like, he's really passionate about all of the material, so I don't think he would let a bad movie go through. Although I think he was fairly responsible for writing Green Lantern film, so who knows?
We all make mistakes, eh?
yeah absolutely. Another thing which I noticed, it just flashed up on my screen actually as I was browsing, is that you know, the Supergirl TV series, they are, for the second season, they're actually putting Superman in.
Yeah.
Which I thought was odd, because they've kind of been really doing this dance of, you know, the TV and the films are separate, but we're using all the different characters.
Mm.
You know, we're not doing any crossover. And then I think as soon as they've decided that they're going to make a Flash movie, as well as having a Flash TV series and have it be the same version of the Flash, I think that's just opened the floodgates. And so they've released a photograph of whoever's going to be playing Superman, and the costume is pretty much identical to forget his name now. Who's playing Superman in the films? Henry Cavill.
I'll believe
you. Is that right? So, like, the costume is pretty identical. So I think, I'm not really sure how they're playing it, but I think they're starting to span out now into a different tact of saying, well, we've got parallel universes, one being the TV branch and one being the movie branch. But I thought that was quite interesting, although slightly curious, because Superman has had his own TV series, so many different TV series. I find it odd that he's going to be like a bit part in a different show.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they'll use that to spin out into a new Superman TV series.
Yeah, maybe they're not testing the waters a little bit, and they're going to see what the reaction's like before they realise whether they want to make their own show or not for him.
Because I never actually watched the Lois and Clark series, but I know that was hugely popular in the 90s, wasn't it? And I did actually, I think I've seen about half of Smallville, and I really enjoyed that. So I think there probably is a lot of potential. I think Superman probably has more potential in TV series than in films, possibly. But I think that you could say that for a lot of these comic book guys, probably.
Yeah.
It's an episodic format, isn't it? That's the whole point.
And it's more like a comic where you can get a long, ongoing stories and relationships instead of just a one-off. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to Marvel. Marvel has just a couple of mentions here. Marvel's doing their big event of the summer at the moment, which is Civil War II, which, when it was announced, it sounded like it was just going to be dreadful, because the Civil War, which was now 10 years ago, I can't believe it.
Wow.
It was a really good arc. And it obviously had some repercussions that were felt in the comics for probably like 5 or 6 years. But now they've got that going on, but they're doing some really controversial things. Like, I don't know if you are aware, but it's been all over the internet, so it's not really a spoiler thing. But Captain America has for like about 2 years been completely depowered and been an old man. And they've recently repowered him. But I think he was repowered by the Cosmic Cube.
Mm.
And when it repowered him, it changed his past or something. But anyway, basically now Captain America is a sleeper Hydra agent, which is pretty controversial. Like, I think they had like Captain America Steve Rogers issue 1, and it was just, everyone's like, yeah, it's Captain America, and then at the end he pushes a guy out of a plane and just says Hail Hydra, and everyone, the internet just exploded. So that's a controversial thing. And also, I don't know if you've seen, but they are, Marvel Comics seems to be getting rid of Tony Stark. Nobody's really sure how or why or where he's going, but they've made a big thing of saying that he's basically the role of the invincible Iron Man is being given over to, I think, like a 16-year-old girl or something.
Yeah, I saw that.
That is true.
Yeah.
I saw that. Which is ironic.
Yeah.
She's still going to be called Iron Man.
Yeah, I know.
The Iron Lady would make so much more sense.
Yeah, I know. But they've obviously recently they replaced Thor. They put new Thor in, and that's been Jane Foster, who was a character in Thor. She's been going, I think, for maybe 2 years.
Have you read any of that?
I haven't, but I understand that it's excellent.
Oh, cool!
Apparently, yeah. One of Marvel's best series has been the Jane Foster Thor run.
Oh, nice.
But they are actually doing a series at the end of the Secret, during the Secret Wars arc that happened last year, I think, one of the where all of the universes collapsed into each other, one of the things that happened is that Ultimate Thor, I think, died, but his hammer was knocking around. So I think the old Thor, who is now depowered, is going to end up getting Ultimate Thor's hammer, and so he will be rethawed. But
cool.
Rethawed.
He's going to be frozen.
Yeah, yeah. I think Jane Foster is going to stay as main Thor. They've obviously, you've got Hydra, Captain America, but they've put The Falcon character, Sam Wilson, has been acting as Captain America again for about 2 years. So it's understandable that they replace Iron Man as well. But just an interesting decision to take, because, I mean, I think part of the Iron Man character is the industrial billionaire playboy sort of thing. So they're taking it in a totally different arc. And also Dr. Doom's getting his own Iron Man armor as well, I believe. He's going to become also Iron Man.
Fair enough.
So yeah, that's just a couple of Marvel things. Also, I just noticed that Comixology are having a massive sale on Star Trek comics, so I might pick up the Star Trek Green Lantern crossover, which is $2.99 at the moment. That can only be excellent.
Star Trek Green Lantern. Oh man, I want to read that.
I know. Yeah, I'm gonna. It's got to be better than when they did the Doctor Who Star Trek The Next Generation crossover comic, which was pretty bad.
I own a copy of that.
Do you?
I do. I own two comics. That's one of them, and the other one is the issue of Spider-Man when he meets Barack Obama.
Yeah, excellent.
excellent comic.
Yes. Yes. I didn't think that the Doctor Who Star Trek crossover was it. It wasn't awful, but it was also pretty cheesy, so...
I haven't actually read it, but I do own it.
So that's all from me on comic updates. There was just one thing that I wanted to mention, super brief, and it's kind of an update. I was listening to another podcast in the week, a development podcast, and it's one that has quite a big listenership, I believe. But one of the hosts on that was just talking about how much he loves playing Stellaris at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think of John... who awesome. Obviously acting engine lead on that, and so I had a little burst of pride as I was driving into driving home.
Acting is right.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Always nice to hear those stories. That's really cool. You have to tell me what the podcast was called.
Yeah, I will. Well, I think it was the JavaScript Jabber podcast, I think.
Cool. Awesome.
So yeah,
I have one brief comic book update.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Horror.
I watched Deadpool.
Oh yes, awesome. And you enjoyed it?
And I enjoyed it massively.
Yeah,
it is awesome.
It was excellent, but that's mainly because I like Ryan Reynolds, so.
It breaks a lot of film molds. It's really good, that film. I love it.
Yeah, it's good film.
Right, let's sweep through a little bit of news before we move on to the main topic. So tiny update from me, more just graphics cards really. So Nvidia have announced the Nvidia Titan X, which is their new super graphics card, or super gaming graphics card at least, which I guess is essentially two 1080s stuck together. Not quite, but if you think of it that way, I don't think you'd be getting too far wrong, and it's going to cost twice the cost of a 1080. So yeah, that's just going to be a uber graphics card that no one can afford, because it's probably going to cost about $1,500 or something, so £1,400. And then there was an interesting announcement at SIGGRAPH. It's been the kind of graphics developers conference this week, big global one. And AMD have announced a GPU that has a 1 terabyte SSD drive stuck to the side of it. And now, primarily for running simulations and things, so if you're a scientist, you can just upload all your data to the GPU and leave it there, because it's now got a terabyte of storage. But, you know, maybe one day we'll see something like this come out for games, maybe with a 32 gigs of storage on the GPU, so that you can upload millions and millions of textures and just paste them in as you want them without going off the CPU. So, kind of interesting, but not a huge amount to report other than its existence, so...
And Ben, I'm very pleased with my GTX 1080.
Yeah.
It's working well. Still, I'm kind of disappointed that the Titan X has come out now, because I would totally have got that instead. But the 1080's doing fine at the moment.
Yeah, I'm still looking at a 1080, even though they've been out of stock for 2 months. Like, the day they came out, they went out of stock, and they still are. But I think the Titan X is just a little bit too rich for me. So there's a game coming out sometime next year,
there is.
That you wanted to talk about, Ben.
Surprise announcement for Sonic the Hedgehog's 25th anniversary, which is this year. So on his 26th anniversary, they're releasing a game, which is Sonic Mania, which is the they remastered like the Sonic games for like the Xbox, the PlayStation, and for iOS and stuff not long ago. So like there's proper widescreen versions of Sonic, Sonic 2, Sonic and Knuckles, Sonic CD, I think, which a guy called Christian Whitehead built. And I think, I could be wrong on this, but I think he's just one guy, and he basically rebuilt the entire engine of the original Sonic games and tried to release this stuff, and then Sonic team basically bought it and were like, yep, we'll get you to do all of these. And he, along with some other developers, have now built this game called Sonic Mania, which is a brand new Sonic the Hedgehog game, but it looks exactly like the Mega Drive style games, and it uses that engine. Because one of the problems with Sonic the Hedgehog 4 is that the physics engine was utterly terrible. I don't know how the people that build Sonic the Hedgehog can't get jumping and falling to feel correct, but they did it. So this looks great. I mean, it just looks like exactly what everyone wanted Sonic the Hedgehog 4 to be. I watched 8 minutes of gameplay the other day, and they've kind of done an interesting thing. The first level is the Green Hill Zone from Sonic 1, but they've stitched all three levels together. So instead of when you get to the end, you jump through a ring and then you start again, they've put like a bit, so it's like seamless between each one, so that you just literally run through as if it was one long level, which is kind of cool. But then they've built loads of new levels, and there's like a new drop spin attack and stuff, and it looks really good. I mean, it just looks exactly what I wanted from Sonic 4 and didn't get. So that comes out February next year.
Is this the same game that they released a trailer for that looked like it was going to be a sequel to Sonic Generations? Because there was a trailer came out of Comic-Con which had like old and new Sonic in it. And I assumed that that's what you're going to talk, because I saw that and I loved Sonic Generations. It was a great game.
No, I think there's another Sonic
game. Might be that one.
I think there's another Sonic game coming out, yeah.
Okay.
There is, yeah.
Maybe Project this is Sonic just, or something, I don't know.
It's by the Sonic team, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
So, I mean, if they do a decent sequel to Generations, I would be happy, because I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they're working on is the other thing, and that's coming out sooner. And then this was like the surprise.
Okay, cool, awesome.
To celebrate 25 years, and it's great. I'll stick the trailer for it in the show notes, because the trailer should be awesome.
Wicked.
Yeah, looks like someone's A-level project, but it's cool.
It really does look like, I mean, there's quite a lot of mods for like Sonic 2, where they've added levels that were supposed to be in it but then removed at the last minute, and people have like restored them and stuff. It kind of looks like that, like someone's just made a mod for Sonic 2, which is awesome, but it's all official and has new stuff in it, so it's gonna be great. Awesome. Unfortunately, it won't have music by Michael Jackson like Sonic 3 did.
Maybe
my favorite piece of trivia is that he wrote most of the music for Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
Nice.
And then the whole court case thing fled up, and they basically dropped him and were like, nope, not putting your name on this. And so some other composer came in and basically took it and just went, yeah, it's mine.
Awesome.
But you can like listen to like some of the songs in it. Like I think it's the fourth level in Sonic 3, which is like the casino one. It's got like a little bit in it, which is exactly the same from the famous Michael Jackson song Jam. It's like identical, and there's loads of bits where it's just blatantly his songs that he did later that they've just kept in.
So that's interesting. Maybe I'll replay it.
Well, the Sonic soundtrack's so good.
Cool, so it's time to move on to the main topic, just a few minutes into the show. And I recently, I guess 2 or 3 months ago now, got my hands on an HTC Vive, which seems like a good time for us to talk about virtual reality. So, guess just to start, so I have a Vive and massive gamer. Ben, I believe you're in the kind of camp somewhere in the middle. You're like, I kind of like the idea of VR, but I haven't got committed yet. And Chris...
Originally, I was going to get the Vive, and then I've sort of fallen back a bit and sort of gone, well, I might just wait and see what the next generation brings.
And I'm guessing, Chris, you haven't given too much thought to VR yet. I could be completely wrong, but
my most recent experience with virtual reality was that game show hosted by Craig Charles in the early 90s, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, Awesome. But yeah, I think that gives us a nice spectrum, because I own one and you guys will have hopefully good questions and intrigue about the system. So hopefully that will help us explain it nicely. So I'll do a really quick rundown of what VR devices are available today. And then maybe at the end we'll talk about the ones that are coming soon. But out now, there could be more, but there is the HTC Vive, which is Valve's offering, and the Oculus Rift, which I guess is Facebook's offering, even though I still see it as John Carmack's offering.
Wait, did you say Valve?
Yeah, Valve and HTC.
Wait, did the HTC Vive? Oh, right, I didn't realise that.
I mean, obviously HTC are doing the hardware, but Valve, basically the driving force behind it. So.
Okay, interesting.
And then Then there are the kind of at the complete opposite end of the scale, the phone adoption VR boxes. So if you have a Samsung S, I'm not sure which phones to be fair, but there is Samsung Gear VR, which fits a range of Samsung phones. So you just plug your phone into the front and it becomes a screen, and then it feeds sort of your gyroscope information. Maybe the phone does it, I'm not sure. But there is basic communication between the device that the phone plugs into and the phone itself, but it's a low-cost VR experience. That's about $100. And then Google have done Google Cardboard, which is a super cheap cardboard box which you can put your phone in with two glass lenses. And I actually got one of those a month or two before my Vive, just for shits and giggles. And for $10, I mean, there are different versions, because it's kind of a open source design, even though it's a piece of cardboard that folds up. Yeah, so other people have done slightly more comfy ones. So I got one for $15 maybe, or yeah, £10. And you just slot your phone in and you can watch some 3D videos and play a small handful of games on iOS, probably a few more on Android. But kind of a nice way to try out VR if you're not really sure what it is or whether it's something you'd be interested in. And then there's one more that I saw called the Avagant Glyph. And these are lower resolution VR goggles, which basically look like a pair of headphones. And when you want to, you just tilt them forwards, and then these little lenses fit right close to your eye and uses a bunch of mirrors. So there's no huge box on your face. It's just like a tiny Geordie LaForge band, which looks cool in principle, but they're only 720p screens, and the field of view is about 40 or 50 degrees, I think, instead of 100. So I think it's, I don't think it's necessarily solving the same problem, if you know what I mean. I don't know if it's trying to make a fully immersive 3D game environment kind of thing, or if it's a bit more like, well, this is more specialised and you're looking through a window into a world still. But yeah, so I mean, that's a really quick overview, I guess, of the current technologies, and I guess they fit into two different categories. There's the phone-driven ones that are cheaper, and they make play on the fact you've already got a phone, which you can slot into a device, and it uses the lenses in order to distort the image, so it kind of gives you a cheapish VR experience, but it's cheap, so most people can afford it, and they can just play with it and talk, watch a video or two, and for $10 or $20, it's kind of a fun thing to play with. And then there's the PC-driven ones, which are at least $600, you know, £450 upwards. But that's because they've got very high resolution, small screens running usually at 90 frames a second or higher.
I guess it's very similar to, like, with 3D, how you can have the green and red glasses to do, you know, oh, look, that's 3D, and you can move images around, and you can even watch films with the old blue and or whatever the green and red lenses were. I had like Blu-rays that used that and they were terrible, but it worked. And then you had like proper 3D where you put the proper passive glasses on and had like a big HDTV doing it, which looks way better. I'm assuming that's the difference in quality between using the phone ones and the PC ones.
Yeah, I mean, not that drastic. I mean, you get more than two colours from your phone.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you did with those 3D things. Covered the image, but it still worked in full color. But,
yeah.
It's kind of that similar performance leap.
Yeah, definitely, and that's definitely the case with the cardboard. I haven't tried the Gear VR. It's it's a bit juddery. You wouldn't want to sit and play with it for 3 hours like you would maybe with a Vive, but for a short 10-15 minute, just do this. And the cool thing is they're so cheap. People can kind of give them away when they're trying new things out. So I think it's either Sky or Olympics are doing something soon where they're going to film a whole bunch of events in VR. And I'm pretty sure you can just get free headsets. If you know, like, register for the, you know, buy the Olympics package where you get 70 videos in VR, and we'll just send you a cardboard because they cost $10.
Right.
So I think that's really cool because it makes it accessible and everyone can, it's not just the really expensive dream, everyone can at least have a play for hardly any money, even if it's substandard. But it gives you, you know what you're getting then, and you can imagine what it would be like with a much better one. So. That's kind of interesting, but yeah. So I've got the HTC Vive. I'm going to call it the first edition because there's hints that there might be some refresh coming with some tweaks. And I guess that's kind of the standard PC VR fare. So the resolution is 1080 by 1200 per eye, and the field of view is 110 degrees, and I think it runs at 90 FPS. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Assuming your graphics card can push that out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the maximum it'll run at.
Yeah. So my 970, I can tell it struggles sometimes. I'm eagerly awaiting a 1080 so that I can play a few of the experiences I've played with hopefully a bit less juddering and motion sickness.
How does it actually make you feel sick?
Only one game has made me feel sick, and that was a racing game. And I'm not sure if that's because of my bad driving.
Right,
or low frame rate, or both.
And you know, I mean, I've been in cars with bad drivers, and I haven't felt sick. So,
the real question is, Dan, have you ever been sick when I've driven you?
No.
And there we go. Then it's pretty... not your drive. We've nearly died twice.
We have, and I didn't feel sick or really scared in both scenarios. That's a worrying thing.
Which was the driving game then?
Project Cars supports, right. Supports VR now. It's something which they've added on.
Right, okay.
From what I understand, if the frames per second in, like, if it's something where you're literally moving around and you're fairly close to it, if you're going at less than 90 frames a second, you will get motion sickness because the brain doesn't believe what it's seeing because it's you can see the obvious glitches, and so it's very... immersive, like you don't notice it when you're looking at it necessarily. Like some people can't distinguish between like 40 frames a second and 90, but your brain can, and you're just sick. Apparently, I was reading a paper about it the other day. It's quite interesting that the reason people get motion sickness is that the brain basically sees it, doesn't believe it, so it assumes you're hallucinating and thus you've been poisoned. So it has to throw up in order to get rid of the poison, which is kind of makes sense. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Fun fact on motion sickness.
So, I mean, I guess most of the experiences that I've played have been you're in a room or you're in an environment and you look around and maybe you can teleport around or even walk around in the room scale. But in those, I think I've noticed a drop of frame rate, but it's not made me feel sick. I've just been a bit like, ugh, this is annoying. But in the car game, I guess because you're going at 100 kilometers an hour around a track, and then when it's juddering, I guess exactly what you just said kicks in. And then you're like,
yeah.
Your brain is like, hang on, this isn't right.
Something is amiss here.
Yeah. I want to process this information because he's moving fast and I want to keep him alive. But it's not right. So
one of the things you just touched upon there, I think, is the most interesting thing about the Vive, which is why I would go for the Vive over the Rift. I mean, minor software details and compatibility aside, is the fact that with the Vive, you can do what's called room scale experiences. So they have like these two lighthouse things, which are like infrared blasters, basically, that you put either end of the room, and then you can play in that entire space. Whereas with the Rift, you can only really sit and look around. Like you can't, if you move around, it doesn't know that you're moving because it doesn't have that capability. At least that's my understanding of it.
Yeah, so I mean, that's really where the Vive shines, and potentially all of VR shines in my eyes. So I've got the Vive set up with the lighthouse box to either side of my desk. My office room isn't huge, so I can't use the full it's kind of weird. You can put it in, so you can put the Vive in full room scale experience mode, or you can just put it in, I don't really have much space mode, which is what I've got it in. But when you start a game up, if it supports both, it will kind of toggle between them, and then you can teleport around instead of walking around. But some games, even the room scale ones, it still lets me play. I just end up walking into desks and banging my head against them. and then there's obviously some games which support the Oculus Rift, so they don't really have support for any of the hand or body tracking. But yeah, so I guess that kind of comes out as two features. So there's the room scale thing, which lets you walk around the predefined area like a holodeck, and that's super awesome.
Nice.
So there's a demo which Valve put out for Portal. It's not really a game, it's more of an experience. And it starts you off in a room, and the room is obviously the exact size it should be for you to be able to walk around if you've got space in your house for room scale. So you can just walk around this environment, you can kind of interact with things. And the other part which is cool about the Vive, which the Oculus Rift may get something similar to at some point, but I don't know how that's going because it wasn't there at launch, is there's two controllers that come with the Vive, and the same lighthouse boxes track them in 3D space. And what's cool is that, so you put your Vive on, then you pick up the controller and you can see it in the 3D world, and games are free to retheme it if they want. So in the Portal game, it looks slightly different, like it's white and slightly kind of grungy, rusty. That kind of Valve Portal painted type thing. But it's still got the same buttons on as the real one, so you're moving your hands around and these things are moving around in 3D space, which is really cool because that gives you a connection to the 3D world, and it really tricks your brain into thinking you're there. So you can walk up to things and you like want to open a drawer, and then you touch it with the controller and you click a button and you just pull it open, and then the drawer opens and you can see all the stuff inside. You can interact with it. So I think those two things, for me at least, is what makes VR from a novelty kind of, look, I can sit here and look around, to something genuinely new and fresh and super, super immersive. I mean, the amount of times I've kind of gone, what's going on? Why isn't such and such working properly? And maybe, why isn't it picking me up? And I've realised that I've walked halfway across the room and I'm facing the wall or something. Oh, shit. I just thought I was standing in front of my monitor looking at it still. But when I came to reorient myself, I'd actually gone up to the window. My cables.
People outside looking at you going, what's he doing?
Why is he standing in his window naked? No. So yeah, so that's what makes the Vive at least super, super cool for me. And overall,
the Rift the Rift comes with like an Xbox One controller that obviously it doesn't see and doesn't know what it is. So you have like the immersion in the head, but you are controlling it just with an Xbox controller. So the immersion isn't as great. But they are coming out with, I think they're called Rift Touch controllers. They were announced a while back. Just not coming until later this year, I think. And I don't think there's pricing information. I could be wrong. But that's why, if you look at it from a cost comparison, the Rift is $200 cheaper. But then it doesn't do the full scale tracking and it doesn't have the controllers. So there is a reason why they're not the same price, because the actual units themselves are pretty much identical. They're the same resolution, same field of view, same frames per second, all that kind of stuff. Mm. But it's really more about the lighthouse stuff and the controllers.
Yeah, and the overall, there is one big change in the tracking technology, and I can't remember which way around it is. So the VR, the Vive must use the boxes, has the IR in it, and then the camera is on the Vive's headset, which is what it uses to track the VR. Whereas the Oculus Rift is the other way around. The headset's got the VR blaster on it, and the camera's an actual camera that you put somewhere, I think. And there have been various people's reviews and opinions of both of these, and the impression I got was that the Vive one is slightly better, but I could be, that could have just been the lay of the land at that time. But I got the impression from when I was reading those reviews that the Vive one is slightly better, because you can just put the nice thing is you can put your lighthouse boxes. One thing they suggest is that you mount them on your wall or something, right in the top corner, of your room, if you've got a big room, and you just leave them there all the time. And then you can just put your headset on and walk around your room, and it'll be room scale. So that's kind of cool. And I guess that's beneficial if you wanted to have multiple headsets tracked at once. So maybe if they get a bit cheaper and you decide, yeah, we'll get one for each of us, you know, my wife and I, and we'll play games together. And I guess you could just use the same lighthouse boxes and have two different headsets. So, although you probably need two PCs with two 1080s, GTX 1080s to drive them. So that would not be a cheap endeavor to play a two-player VR game.
Don't get any ideas, Ben. You don't need them.
Cool, but I mean, the headset itself is pretty comfortable. I've worn it for, I guess we played Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes last week for 2 hours.
That was fun.
And I didn't really feel, apart from being a bit hot and sweaty because it's 30 degrees in Sweden at the moment.
Because you had me talking in your ear the whole time.
Yeah, and that just gets me hot and sweaty, you know.
Oh. I'm getting that motion sickness. Oh.
danger. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. But yeah, so it's pretty comfortable. Like I said, I walked for 2 hours. It's fine. Didn't really feel like I had a problem wearing it. And it's very responsive. I mean, when you've got a game that's running at 90, you're moving your head around, that does not feel like there's any lag. And I guess that's critical. If there was lag when you moved your head around, I think the whole thing would just not exist as it does today, because it wouldn't have got any traction. So, you know, you spin your head around really fast and it feels like it's got no delay. I mean, I guess there is a frame at least, 10 milliseconds or something, but you don't really notice it. So that's pretty awesome. So I thought we could talk about a few of the games and experiences that I've played so far. Ben, you and I played last Tuesday, I believe. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes for a couple of hours, and that is a game. It's probably the first time we've gamed online where you didn't actually need a computer, right?
No, I it's pretty cool. I've been wanting to play it for ages, and basically one of you is defusing a bomb. You'll be in a room with a bomb, and then the other person has the instruction manual for how to defuse bombs, and they'll talk it you through it, but they can't see it. So I've got like a 25-page manual printed, and I just sat in my office just chatting to you through like a microphone. I couldn't see anything, and then you're in virtual reality with this bot trying to defuse it before the timer runs out, and it was a lot of fun.
Sounds very like manic. A good game for people with virtual reality to play with their poor friends. Like, you can be the manual guy. I'm always the manual guy.
So I'll read you like one of the puzzles, one of the basic ones. So there's like on the subject of wires. So John was like, he'd see like a little module which had a number of wires on it. So then I have to like ask how many wires are there. So it's like, okay, there's 5 wires. It's like, if the last wire is black and the last digit of the serial number on the case is odd, then cut the fourth wire. Otherwise, if there's exactly one red wire and there's more than one yellow wire, cut the first wire. Otherwise, if there are no black wires, cut the second wire. Otherwise, cut the first wire. And so it requires a lot of him describing everything that he can see. And like, here's the serial number, here's what's on the side, here's the colour of all the stuff, so that I can then read through this list and be like, okay, yeah, you should probably cut the second one. And then he cuts it and it starts counting down faster. I'm like, oh, yep, sorry, that was the wrong one. Cut the first one. And it was a lot of fun, especially when it gets more complicated. I mean, we only played it for 2 hours, but later on there's things called needy switches where John will basically, whilst I'm trying to work out how to do something, he'll be having to like press a button repeatedly every 10 seconds because otherwise the bomb will go off, that kind of stuff. it was pretty good from my side, but you should probably describe from your side what it was like, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, you can play it without VR at all. So you can indulge your poor friends if you want to.
I own the game, so I'm going to make John be the manual guy next time so that I can play.
But I think the experience is really enhanced with VR, because it starts off and you're sitting in this room and you can see all the kind of bomb marks on the walls from where the last ones went off and everything's a bit raggedy. And then it fades in from black and there's just a desk in front of you with a bomb on it. And interacting with all the items is done with an Xbox controller, so this isn't like a Vive compatible game beyond having a headset. And the interaction is really sweet, like really crisp, because you just move around with, it's basically a menu, you know, you can move around all the items with an Xbox controller, but you can turn it around and you can spin it around in 3D space with the analog stick, and you can, obviously you can actually move your head around it, which is really cool. So if it's, if you turned it and you can't quite see far enough, you just sort of pop your head to the right a little bit and look at the serial number, or turn your head around 90 degrees to read the serial number on the sign. So things like that make it really immersive, and I think they really add to having the virtual headset. And then, even in the levels we've been playing so far, they have added a few events to try and shit you up.
Jump scares.
Not too bad, but the game's obviously already quite tense because it's ticking down. You can't always see the time because the bomb's two-sided, and there's some things you have to do on both sides. So you flip it over and you do some work on the side. You can't see the time left. So it's already quite tense. You can just hear beeping and things. And then all of a sudden, I don't want to send any spoilers, but there'll be external factors in the room that you might have to attend to. So the lights might flicker and go off or something, and maybe there's something you can do about it, and maybe there isn't. And a few of these things happen, and you're like, oh man, there's only 45 seconds left, and I need to tell Ben what the wires are so he can figure out which one to cut. But it's dark. And then some of the runs ended up with us just... At the end, I'm like, I'm just going to have to hit buttons, Ben.
Him going east and cutting wires, basically, until he died.
There was one, though.
The best one was when we tried to do Morse code, and John was just terrible at it. There's like a little light flickering, and I've got a Morse code, like, a reference, so all I need for him to do is to tell me the dots and dashes and spaces, and then I can tell him what the word is, so he can enter it into the bomb. And he's just going, dot, dot, dash, dot, dot, space. But, oh no, that last dash was a dot, 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 dash, dot, 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 dash. Long pause. Got it? What? No. The word might be Baker, but I could try that.
Nope, now the time is going down quicker. Yeah. And the red lights are flashing. So, but yeah, that was a really good experience. And I think the VR really added to that.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, we'll see next time if you play it without the VR. How you find it, but I found it really immersive because when you've got something to focus on, I think that's where VR really shines. You put it on, and the very first thing I do, because I'm the sort of person who buys a monitor and then looks for the dead pixels, is, you know, you're like, oh, it's all a bit pixely, and you're like, oh, around the edges it's a tiny bit blurry and stuff, because there's more, the focus is better, and I think there's even a bigger pixel density in the middle of the view because of the way the lenses work.
Yeah.
So the text around the edge is more blurry than the stuff in the middle that you're looking at. So you focus on all that first because, you know, it's new technology and you're looking for the flaws. But when you actually start playing something immersive, like Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, that all just, you know, drops away. And it is definitely good enough now to enjoy it. I mean, look, it's obviously going to get better, which is going to be cool. But the technology as it is now is definitely good enough just to whack it on and go, yeah, this is awesome. I feel like I'm kind of there. And yeah, you take your headset off after an hour and you're like, oh, yeah, this is where I am. So that's really cool. And Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes is a very good game to get if you've got a headset and lots of friends who have got Skype. And hopefully a printer or an iPad.
No, it's good. I'd recommend it.
Definitely, yeah. And really cool. Next up, I played a game called VR Pool. And I played this
swimming pool simulator.
Swimming pool simulator.
You just lie on the bed and then you move around left and right.
And then you bucket of water.
Can be an Olympian swimmer.
No, this is more cool 80s hustling pool. And you start off and you're basically in a pub. Well, I guess it's a pool hall because there's a bunch of pool tables around and people playing pool around you.
Fairly good assumption then.
Yeah.
I can see why you made detective.
I do try. Yes, so it's just a pool game at heart. There's lots of different add-ons which they're adding more to, like darts and things. But at the heart of it, there's a pool table and you play pool. But because of the Vive controllers, the pool cue basically goes through the two controllers. So you can, you know, put one controller on the front of the queue, one on the back, and then move it roughly like a real queue. And that was a really good experience. That was one of the ones where at one point the queue was like flickering around, and I was like, "Oh, what's going on? Why is this game, you know, screwing up?" And then you take the headset off and realise it's because you're actually almost in the corridor outside your door. You're like, "Ah, so I guess it can't see me."
In the kitchen with one hand in the sink.
In the garbage, just whatever the things they have, Americans have in the bottom of the sinks where they grind the garbage. But yes, that was actually a really cool experience. And I don't think I'm going to get any better at pool because of it, unfortunately. That would be awesome. But but no, really fun and really immersive. And I think you need room scale to really, really enjoy it, because I kept hitting my table, and there's videos online of people who have leant back to take their shot and then smashed the table, you know, smashed their screen and things. Really easy to do that.
I like the fact that you've got this technology where you can literally do anything you want in virtual reality, and so you can like defuse bombs, you can drive fast cars, you can play around in the portal lab, and so instead you play pool when you could literally just, you know, play pool. You could get pool table for cheaper than the Rift, so the Vive, or just go down to the pub and play pool.
But I can play pool at 3 a.m. with wine in one hand. With people in Germany, maybe, I don't know.
Okay. I'd like to see you try and play pool with VR with wine in one hand. Fun thing to watch.
Yeah, there is actually, that reminds me, there's one cool feature on the Vive, and that's there is a button on the side, but I don't think that triggers it. You can push some buttons on the controllers, and it actually turns a real webcam on the front of the Vive, so you can see the real world in quite low resolution, but you can see through and pick up a glass or something without taking the headset off, and that's actually really useful. Sometimes you just want to quickly check something, or you know, look at something on your desk, and then you can. So that's really, really super useful. Other games I've talked about already, Project Cars made me feel a bit sick, and the graphics quality wasn't great. It was a bit juddery, but overall, I think it's a promising kind of look for the future, even if it's not quite there yet. Maybe with a 1080.
Yeah, I have a feeling a lot of these things will get solved by having the 1080, because like Pascal graphics chip does a lot to improve VR stuff, allegedly. Mm. So I think a lot of this stuff will improve. We'll probably discuss it at length and follow up in episode 16 next year.
You think I'll have a 1080 by then?
Yeah, well, that's true. Out of stock in Stockholm.
Forever. But yeah, so Project Cars, maybe we'll do that in follow-up in a future show, because I think the experience wasn't great yet, but I'm hoping it gets better. And then there was the Portal demo, which I've already mentioned. So now, there's something cool I thought of you, Chris, when I read about this, and you may have seen it at the E3 conference, but Ubisoft are doing the Star Trek Bridge experience with
VR. Yeah, I have seen that. It looks awesome, but I've heard that it's incredibly boring.
Yeah.
Sounds like Star Trek.
Oh, hey! Oh, not cool, man.
You can get disappointed by Captain Janeway in VR. You can just go up to her and be like, can you sign this? And just give you a dirty look. Yeah. I'm going to charge you £30.
Oh, it all comes flooding back.
Oh, brilliant. But you're right, I've heard it's not that exciting at the moment, but I still have fairly high hopes that maybe they'll add a bit more action to it. I think the fundamental problem is that if you're the engineer, then in a 15-minute period, the only things you have to do are more power for the impulse drive.
Clean the dilithium chambers. In fairness, if I was going to have an actual Star Trek experience, I would much rather sit on the bridge as it's just flying through space, not being attacked by the Borg and stuff. So it's an actual proper simulator of what you would like Star Trek to be like if it was real. Because it would be fairly unpleasant if you were playing Bridge Crew and there would like Borg teleporting in front of you and coming after you. I don't think that would be a pleasant thing at all.
The achievement is you sat in the captain's chair for 4 hours and nothing happened.
Yeah,
achievement unlocked.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm quietly hopeful that one day in 3 years' time, when VR is more accessible and this game's been out for a while, it's evolved, that the three of us can maybe do a, you know, do a show from the bridge.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really good.
Pen it down for the Divide 47.
Episode 20.
So, other experiences I've mentioned already, the Sky and the Olympics. Whoever they are recording the Olympics are going to record a bunch of stuff in VR so that you can watch it back on... I think the Olympics one is actually locked down to just the Samsung Gear VR, which is a bit of a shame. But Sky are going to be releasing presumably a channel that you can pay for, and there'll be shows on it which are recorded in full 360. So you can watch the whole experience back, which is a pretty cool idea. The big problem I've had when I've just downloaded a few kind of sample videos online to see them in 360 is either they're not that high quality, so you're looking around and it's all quite pixely, or you know, you download a minute of a concert or something and it's awesome, but it's 1.7 gigs for 1 minute. Because it's actually high enough resolution for you to look around and see things in HD. So that's where your ultra 200 gig Blu-rays are going to come in handy. The things Sony talked about when they talked about the PS4 4 years ago. Many layered Blu-rays, I guess. So. But yeah, so I think that's going to be a push for your internet. Credit and Chris.
I think you'll find that my internet connection has been superb today.
It has?
Yeah. Thank you.
56K audio hasn't pushed it to the brink today.
There you go. See, everything's improving in Crediton. That's why everyone flocks to live here.
Other things are just really quick mentions, I guess. They're adding VR to Fallout 4, and there's going to be a few other games like Batman and Assassin's Creed is getting a VR environment.
I would be interested in the Arkham VR because the Arkham games are just so much fun. They're so much fun to play. I can imagine it'd be really very satisfying. Will it be a first person experience? Presumably. Otherwise, I don't know how you'd play it.
I'm trying to remember. I did read about it, but I've forgotten because I've been read about
it. I assume it'd be like an on rails thing, like you just move around punching stuff.
Which sounds brilliant.
Yeah, I guess first person is one of the things that's a bit more challenging in VR because there's a disconnect between moving a person around with the controller and what actually happens with your head. Mm. Something where you're in a car or a spaceship, say, is really good because your body is fixed and you're expecting to have to use some sort of control device like the steering wheel or the joystick in order to move the ship around. But in a first-person game... when you're using the right stick to look around and your head, it's kind of a bit weird.
Yeah.
So, because of that, I don't know what they're actually going to go for Batman Arkham VR. But I guess something like Fallout is going to have to be that kind of both using a joystick and a head to look around.
So, yeah.
Maybe it
there are a
too
few
bad.
Like shooting games, but you just stand still. Like there's one where just zombies run at you, and you're just stood still, and you just move around shooting them. And then once they're all dead, then you get teleported to another area. Or some have like basic movement where you can like point on the floor and press something, and then you teleport over there. But you're not going to get like a walking around Fallout doing stuff because obviously you're going to run out of space pretty quick. And it's the movement that is the real issue with VR.
And I'm really shocked to not see many House of the Dead type on rails shooters. I thought that would be the first thing we'd see shoveled out. Because that seems perfect for it, right? With the Vive, you can use the controllers to point around space. You don't have to worry about moving around. You just have an experience. Like, what was the... there was House of the Dead. Maybe it was just House of the Dead again, but there was a one on the Wii as well, right?
Yeah, Overkill. God, that Overkill, was such a good game.
And there was... is it Rage? Or something like that. There was one that was... it was on the iPhone as well. It was an on-rails shooter, but they made that for the Wii or the Xbox or something. I think it was called Rage.
That would be perfect in VR. Something where you're on-rails and you just use your little in 3D space controllers to shoot around. That would be sweet. So, yeah. But the Batman Arkham game apparently is going to be pretty short. Like 2 or 3 hours long, I think. So, but I don't know. I don't know much about it. Maybe, we'll do some follow-up next time.
Yes.
I guess it's one of the PlayStation VR things. So, last topic I wanted to quickly mention was just a quick overview of the upcoming VR stuff that we haven't got yet. So, obviously, Sony have announced the PlayStation VR, which is coming in October.
And Ben's very excited about that one.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't get it. I mean, like, the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, they struggle to do 1080p at 30 frames a second. How the hell are you going to have decent eyes at like 90 frames a second? You're not. It's just going to be a vomit fest. It sounds terrible.
One thing I will say for VR is that big, colourful 3D environments that aren't very realistic are still immersive. And this maybe surprised me a bit. So it doesn't have to be a photorealistic environment to be immersive. So maybe they'll play on that and they'll go for something more cartoony games like Nintendo colours. Yeah.
But I kind of feel like
Minecraft, that could work. Although it is actually much more intensive than you would imagine with its graphics. But there wasn't there talk about doing Minecraft in VR? Or did I completely imagine
that? No, that's definitely true.
Yes.
That's the HoloLens. That's
right, okay.
I think also VR, I think.
Oh, probably. Probably. I know that they're pushing for it with the Microsoft HoloLens, which is like the augmented reality one, where you like wear goggles. But it interacts with stuff on your desk, so like you can play Minecraft.
See, I think that one looks
stacks stuff on your coffee table.
Although, isn't it still going to be something like $500 or something? It's still pretty pricey, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Microsoft HoloLens at the moment is $3,000 for the dev kit. Because it's a cross
VR and
augmented AR, I guess. Like you say, augmented reality. So, I reckon it'll be about $1,000 when it eventually comes out for the public.
And you know,
people are paying that for the Vive now, right?
Very beefy PC.
Yeah. But I don't know, Chris, are you any interest in PlayStation VR?
Not particularly. I mean, I don't do much gaming at the moment, so it's just, it's not something that's on my radar, really. I'd like to have a go with it. You know, I wouldn't mind just if there was some virtual reality somewhere that I could access, you know, if you could go down and had, if there was like a modern arcade or something where they just had a bunch of rooms where you could, you know, rent the HTC Vive for an hour or whatever, I'd be up for doing that.
Yeah.
I'd really like to try it.
I've mentioned this before, but the Overclockers UK people who've got a shop in,
Stoke.
Stoke, that's it. They've got a Vive set up where you go and you don't have to pay anything. It's just like a demo. You go for 20 minutes and they'll show you how it all works. Cause obviously, they want you to buy it from them. So that's pretty cool. I think there's probably more game shops that will do that over time. So I think that's something you will see.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I think that'll be my experience of it, I think, probably in the medium term, certainly.
In the bigger game stores, I'm sure they'll have PlayStation VR on trial as well. Probably not in Exeter because
they do like
small, right? But
they do like road trips and stuff with this stuff as well. Like in London, they had like a NVIDIA booth where you could test it all out when it launched. So it'll be around the place. I think I'll probably try it the next time I go to Sweden.
Yeah,
I'll be, because that'll be cheaper than buying one.
Yeah. Yeah,
very much. My fill of it and be like, "Hey, this was fun."
Of the last couple that I've heard of, there's one called FOVE, which has eye tracking built in, so it can track where your eyes are in the what you're looking at in the thing, which is kind of an interesting idea. Obviously, going for a novelty value. I'm not sure if it would actually work very well, but potentially interesting. And the guys that made Starbreeze, the guys that made Payday, they're in Sweden too. But somehow they're making a VR headset. It just seems like a weird thing for a game company to back, but they're making it with Acer's, and it's going to have 5,120 pixels by 1440. And so they've got, I think it's four screens inside for almost 1080p screens kind of turned on their side, I guess.
That'd be fun driving that at 90 frames a second.
Yeah. But I think the idea is that it's going to be a lot wider field of view. So instead of just having 110 degrees is going to have 200 degrees. So maybe the screens on the edge won't have such good quality. But yeah, so that's basically a summary, I guess, of where VR is going and what's coming out soon and what we have now. So any final comments from either of you?
I think, it sounds great. I definitely want to try it out, but I think I'll probably wait for the next five before I plump for it and sort of see what games come out. Because at the moment, I've not seen anything that I'm like, I definitely want to play that. I mean, there are a few things like I probably would, you know, fly around in Elite Dangerous for a bit in VR. I'd probably play Keep Talking, Nobody Explodes, and I'd certainly do the Portal demo and a few bits and pieces, but there's nothing that's making me want to drop $80 on VR. But if the new one comes out and it's like a slightly better resolution, a bit more comfortable fit, maybe a slightly wider field of view, then I can see myself definitely getting one at some point. But it's not. I'm excited to try it, and I can see it's definitely going to be the future, and there's going to be all kinds of cool stuff with it, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, and the price is only going to go down, right?
One would hope.
In 3 years' time, it'll be $500 for the new Vive, which will be twice as good. So,
I'm like, just to reiterate, I am looking forward to it being, a thing where you can a service, you know, where you can go out and use it, because I think there's a lot of potential for it to be like something that you could do as a group activity. Maybe, I don't know how many games there are where multiple people can play at once, but they will presumably be coming as well. So, you know, when you get to a day where a few of you can go into a room, put on headsets and play some interactive game, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. They'll probably...
I did see one VR game where you can basically play any board game. And I can see that in the future, the three of us, when we want to play D&D, we just go into virtual reality to do it. And then you can all be sat around a table, just looking at each other as if we
were in the same
room together. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And one day, when the resolution's good enough, it, you know, might even be reasonable to work in it and just have essentially 360 display around you. If the resolution was twice what it was now, you could probably actually work on it and just have, you know, essentially an unlimitedly big monitor. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. So I think that wraps up virtual reality nicely.
It was cool. That was interesting.
Final thoughts pretty much echo what you said. I think it's really cool tech. It's probably a bit too expensive for most people at the moment, because there's not a huge range of experiences. But I'm sure within a couple of years, there'll be more affordable tech. Our PCs will be better, so we'll be able to drive it better. And they'll probably have got over some of the initial hurdles, like have higher resolution and bigger field of view. So, but it's pretty cool technology. So thank you ever so much for listening. Don't forget to check out our website, www.thedivide.co.uk, and you can send us any messages on Twitter at Podcast Divide. Let us know what you might want us to talk about in the upcoming show, and we'll consider it. And please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again. Bye.